Good evening, Demon fans, and welcome back to the Demonland podcast. My name is Andy, and it's been 10 years since the West Coast Eagles decimated the D's by 93 points at the MCG in 2014. The two sides had not met at the home of football in the interim until Sunday, when the Demons recorded a clinical victory over the Eagles and kept their hopes for September action alive. In case you couldn't tell from the sound quality, we're not recording this episode live at Demonland HQ. I spent Sunday afternoon at the happiest place on earth, and no, that wasn't at the MCG watching the D's kick their highest score in a quarter in 2024. I'm now fittingly recording this intro at 1 a.m. in the city that never sleeps. In a moment, Bim Man will present his stats files as well as a preview of the upcoming Bombers match. Well, that's what he's told me anyway. I haven't listened to it yet. So much for quality control on the Demonland podcast. I'll still be away for the upcoming match against Essendon, so I will probably present the podcast next week in a similar format to this. I will return, as will the Demonland podcast, in its regular format after the Dockers game. So, without further ado, here's Bin Man.
Thank you, Andy, for that terrific introduction. Hello, Demonlanders. Welcome to an abridged version of the Demonland podcast tonight. Andy's over in the States recruiting American footballers to come across here and play somewhere between LA and New York, probably right at this moment. And George is on Ian Drury duty in a case involving assault with a rhythm stick. Terrific game of footy on Saturday. It's just me flying solo, as I said, tonight. I'm going to do a bit of a wrap-up of the stats, a deep dive into the stats for the game, and a preview of next week's game. A thriller, really. That's going to be a massive game at the MCG, 70,000 to 80,000 people. I was sort of thinking about when was the last time we played the Bombers in such a meaningful game of footy. Couldn't come up with an answer because I feel like it's quite a long time ago. It's a genuine 8-point game. It's going to shape the finals. I cannot wait. It's going to be a huge game. Max out is a massive, massive blow. But we'll get to that in the preview. Just on the game on Sunday, I thought it was a terrific game of footy. So enjoyable to beat the MCG. 110 on the Sunday arvo, or 110 start, is the perfect time for a game of footy, I reckon. You don't have to wait around all day for the game to start. It's a red Sharon, which I love, the red Sharon. Beautiful sunny day at the G on Sunday. You can get home afterwards. You know, you're not getting home at midnight. So a fantastic day. Hats off to all of the Demonland posse and all the Demonland fans and the Demon fans who got to the footy on the weekend. 32,000 was a fantastic crowd. I thought there was a really terrific energy in the crowd. It was kids' day, and there was heaps of kids about, so the place was buzzing, lots of red and blue. Remarkable, as Andy said last week, that's the first time we've played them at the MCG since 2014, which just, it's hard to even imagine that can happen in a national competition, but there you have it. So it was great to, you know, it was great to win, avenge that loss. From memory, that was a 90-odd point loss, and of course our loss to them just, what, only feels like just a few days ago, but 6 weeks ago when they touched us up in Perth. A really important win, 4 points, 5%, almost just under we gained. That's really important. It might have actually been 5%. People might have thought, well, you know, it would have been great if we'd really kicked away. But again, you know, I'd reiterate the point I've made a few times about percentage. Better to win, you know, keeping them to 55 and us 112 or whatever the final score was, than 130 to 80. Of course, it's, you know, it's great fun to watch us kick goals, but you know, that's the object, is to get as much percentage as possible, and 5% was a good get. That said too, just the Eagles, I think there's a real risk. It's the similar to the Roos game, is to underestimate how well they played. I thought they were pretty impressive for most of the game. Their pressure was right on in the first quarter. Their pressure fell away in the last quarter, but I didn't think their effort fell away. It was just their ability to spread, as Simpson said in his presser. talking about their ability to sort of spread in and shut us down. You know, that's, they just couldn't lay a glove on us in terms of that running power that we displayed. Such a turnaround from the you know, the game that we played 4, 5, 6 weeks back. But I thought they came to play, and they were certainly a completely different team to the side that turned up for their shocking performance against the Hawks the previous week. They were really poor that week, so really no comparison, I think, in terms of the effort that they showed. So, you know, don't discount how well we played. We played from the opening bounce right to the final wire. And even on that last play, it was terrific the way we, you know, refused to give up a score and brought it down the other end of the ground with some really impressive gut running, some brilliant work by Nibbler to get it in board to Cozzy. Pity Cozzy didn't finish that off, because that would have been a fantastic goal. But saved a goal and worked super hard to not let them kick goals in that last quarter, which is really the, you know, that's the key to keeping the percentage pumping along. So a terrific day, lots of highlights. Cozzy's mark was a highlight. Our ball movement was a highlight. Chandler's chin's mark was fantastic. It was awesome to have Melk back. I thought he was really important. There was a question a few weeks ago about leadership in our forward line, and he was leadership in spades. I thought he did a really good job negating McGovern, who's really is a gun, and put some scoreboard pressure on himself. And I think we also got a reminder of how good his field kicking is and how important it is to the way we play, particularly if we're playing a high transition sort of style. That kick to Coz was magnificent, as was the kick that he kicked long over the top to Chandler. That was a beautiful 50-meter kick into space, or enough space for Chandler to get on to set up a goal. Fantastic to have him back. And, you know, anyone who was criticising the decision to bring him back, I think Goodwin's shown that, you know, he knows what he's doing. And, you know, it was amazing to see how ready he was, the Melk, to play. He was a standout, I thought. So just before we get into the stats file, as I've talked about a few times, I was sitting on the wing directly above the interchange bench for the D's, and I'm always curious to the information that they show the players. They've got a video screen in front of them, like a little iPad, that sits in front of them for the whole match, and I can see it with my binoculars from where I sit, and it was really interesting in terms of the sort of thinking for this match and how we approached it, and what our key focus areas were and what the key messages Goody was giving to the players about what, you know, how we wanted the game to look. So the board had a whole bunch of information. The headline across the top of it in big writing was territory. So territory was emphasised. Then under that, there were three subheaders. The first one was contest, and under that, halve and ground shape. The next one was defence, and I couldn't read what was underneath that. Was one brain, which was There were three subheaders: contest, defense, and what was the third one? And contest was half and ground shape. Defense was one brain, was what was written underneath it. I can't remember now if that was one of the headlines, which underneath that, that's right, it was one brain. And underneath that was control, pressure, and speed. So that they were the themes that were coming in. And at the board that they bring out to the players, it's divided up into segments. There's sort of three sections. There's a section that's called mode. At three-quarter time, that mode was power. There's a section for stats, and the stats that were marked up on it were time in forward half, inside 50, contested possessions, and a couple, three others that I couldn't catch. And then I thought this was really interesting. There was the other third of the board was headed reinforcement solutions. And under that, pressure was written 193 as a solution, obviously. Stoppage, two forward arrows, and barbecue. I don't know what barbecue is. So I thought it was really interesting, though, the at the quarter time on the board, the key message that they had in terms of the mode was key messages that came out were power, one brain, and forward, go forward. So clearly they came into the game with a focus on territory, and so, you know, and a focus on winning that. But it was a really curious stat. So there were a bunch of curious stats this week, but one in particular stands out, and it sort of goes to that point about that focus on territory. We had 1.1 kilometers more meters gained than the Eagles, which is just nuts. That's a lot of extra meters gain. That's a really big number. In previous seasons, with the way that we played with our forward half, get it in, trap it in, that would not be so remarkable. There were probably, you know, any number of times where we had that, you know, a kilometre or more of metres gained in a match. But it is this year with the playing that sort of transition turnover game that we've been trying to implement. It is remarkable, and I suspect that'd be our biggest differential for meters gained all season. So big tick in terms of the focus they obviously went into the game with on territory. But what was curious is normally such a differential for any club, but in seasons past, particularly the D's, any sort of differential in metres gained like that up around, you know, a kilometre, 1,000 metres, would almost always correlate with smashing the opposition for inside 50 and time in forward half. But what was unusual was we were dead even for inside 50s and almost dead even for time in forward half, 49% to their 51%. So I thought that was a really sort of, I don't know, anomalous stat. I wondered if one factor for those numbers might be that point about how deep we're often setting our defense, which we didn't against the Lions. So it was sort of going back to a model that we've done in a lot of the games where our defense is really deep and we're absorbing quite deep entries, meaning if we do turn the ball over, we're starting from pretty deep in our back line. So if we win the ball on turnover, it's deep in our defense, and effectively that's lengthening the ground. So I wonder if that helps explain it. I'm not sure if Demon Landers have any other theories. Put it in the thread for the podcast. But yeah, I thought that was a really interesting number. Last week I mentioned a big factor, a big concern. It's a, you know, long-term concern for us was our kicking efficiency. We're only 55.3 last week for kicking efficiency. That's pretty average. To the Lions, 63, differential of 7.7. This week, much, much better. So, you know, so much better. 73.8 to their 68. So plus 5.8. For kicking percentage for kicking efficiency, 73.8 was terrific. You know, a lot of that was we were really spreading the ball well, and we were making it difficult for the Eagles to pressure us. So that's certainly a big factor. The Lions are obviously really up in our grill, which is a big factor. But I think it's further evidence of us getting sort of closer to our optimal shape. But really, some terrific kicking. As I mentioned, really important to have Melksham back in the side, who really helped. I thought AMW's kicking was excellent. The Colts' kicking was much better this week, as was Windsor's kicking. His kicking was a lot sharper than it has been for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And again, I would suggest a big factor, not the only factor, but a big factor in that would be the timing of the high performance program. And, you know, he was running on top of the ground, Windsor, and was arguably our best player, or him or Rivers. Nearly 30% of our kicks of our kicks inside 50 were marked on Sunday. In the last four games, only 17.6% of our kicks were marked. So second to last in that period, in that four-week block, only ahead of the Eagles. So a massive improvement. That was partly, of course, to do with how quickly we were transitioning from the back half and running in waves and getting forward of the ball and creating space in our forward line to hit up targets. But you've got to hit them. And again, I'll point to that kick by, there were a few actually, but the kick by Melksham across his body on the left foot to Coz in the corridor. That was a thing of beauty. The kick to set up the first goal to Colt was a beautiful kick. I can't recall who kicked that in there. There were a number of really excellent kicks inside our 50 that were really important for this match. So the Red and Blueprint talked about it all season. Defense, contest, their fundamentals, whichever game plan Goody plays. Transition back half football with scores from defensive half and turnovers being the key indicator. And fitness, of course, and we'll sort of touch on fitness a little bit in a second. I think this game was the best example of the Red and Blueprint all season. And I think the numbers bear that out. Although, again, there's some curious sort of changes that Goody's sort of tweaking. But it was a very... You know, they would have been very happy in terms of that sort of model that they're trying to implement, because it really was the difference in the game was our ability to hurt them on turnover. So first one, defense, opposition score, really fantastic defensive performance to keep them to only 58 points, given how aggressive we were on transition. So, you know, that's the challenge with this model, is that if you know, it's what Collingwood struggle with, that's why Collingwood have lost on the weekend. That's what Port struggle with, is, you know, when you're aggressive from the back half, you open yourself up to get scored on the counter. And Collingwood basically lost the game against the Suns, for instance, for exactly that reason. They got hurt on the counter from, you know, they were pushing so hard on transition. So I thought it was a brilliant defensive effort. We're number three, despite this new model that we're trying to implement, that, you know, must involve quite a lot of change to their structure and their system. They're still number three in the AFL for defense, which is really super impressive. Intercepts, big part of the defensive indicators. Last week we were down 13 for intercepts and down 12 for intercept marks, so not a great performance from that perspective. This week we were plus 10 for intercepts. We were still down on intercept marks, but last week we only managed 5 intercept marks, and this week we took 15 intercept marks, which was super impressive. 15 to their 20, so down 5 still, but a huge improvement on the previous week. Goody wouldn't be too thrilled with them taking 20 intercept marks, but they, I think it's worth noting that they do have two of the best intercept markers in the game. I think in McGovern and Barras are both terrific players. I'd have both of them at the D's, and particularly Barras, given he's a bit younger. But I think we did a really good job in negating both of those players' influence. They're key to the way they transition the ball. They're key to their game, full stop, for the Eagles. Particularly Melk's job again on McGovern. Again, it just shows how important having a senior player back in the team, a leader. He was very vocal, but I thought he did a terrific job negating McGovern's influence. But still, they took 20 intercept marks. You know, they're a really strong marking side, so, you know, that needs to be factored in. Marks inside 50, in terms of it being a defence, last week we gave up 14 marks inside 50. This week we gave up 15, but we took 21 ourselves, so we were plus 6 for marks inside 50. Again, that was a bit more about the uncontested, you know, the way we were moving the ball inside 50, I think. But nonetheless, we were minus 4 for marks inside 50 last week, plus 6, so it's a 10 turnaround. Contest, really, you know, really this, I think, of all of the numbers, I suspect, and I need to check this with Willow, I think, is that, you know, if all of the different numbers, I think contested possession has probably got the closest correlation, perhaps even pressure, but contested possession, well, certainly for the D's, between winning it and winning the game. Last week we had 154 contested possessions, 24 more than the Lions, and we had hardball gets plus 8. This week for our pressure, it was awesome as well. It wasn't 129 this week. And they had 104, and that's, again, 104 is nothing to sneeze at for the Eagles in terms of their contest, but plus 25 contested possession was very impressive. We did get to that number pretty early in the game, I think, you know, probably part way into the second, and then it was pretty level after that, and it was 154 contested possessions last week to 129, but I think that's really reflective of the game. We really look to stretch them in it, which I think surprised the Eagles a little bit. We really look to use our run and spread and made them work. And when the ball's out in the open, we talked about it. I'm trying to remember, maybe it was the Dogs game. We talked about it in that podcast, is that when you're playing that model, you know, you're going to get less contest essentially. So, less stoppages. It was a relatively low stoppage game, and so less contests. But plus 25 is another impressive effort. Pressure last week, we tailed away a little bit in that last quarter, 161. We talked about that a lot. I'm positive that partly to do with fitness and where we're at in our program. We're sort of, as I said last week, probably fitness is the wrong word, but in terms of, you know, where we're at in our particular high performance program, the stage we're at, I expected us to bounce or to go up a level this week, and we did. Last week our first quarter pressure was average. It was terrible. It was 148. We were minus 38 for that quarter. We were plus 23 in this quarter. 200 bang on, 200's elite. Their pressure was pretty good. 177, 180 is considered AFL average. And just on pressure, just note that how important this idea of pressure is to the clubs. As I've said before, this pressure gauge, or however they talk about this pressure data, was requested by the clubs. And as evidence of the importance of this number for the clubs, as I noted before, the players have got a screen in front of them that tells them right through the match what the pressure rating is. And this week, it was written on the board at quarter time and three quarter time as a reminder of the importance of applying pressure. We dropped off a little bit in the second, but still impressive, 179 to 179. Came out strong in the third quarter, 186 to 162. And this was, for me, one of the most impressive aspects of the entire game. And this really contradicts any sort of notion that we put the cue in the rack and didn't keep working hard. First quarter was 200. Our last quarter was 199. That is super impressive. They fell away to 154. So it was plus 45 in that last quarter. It was, say, 191 for the match to 161 plus 23. That was a bit strange for me, 154 for them, because I watched the game and watched the replay, and it felt like they worked hard in that last quarter, but those numbers, you know, that's a pretty significant drop off. So 154, you know, put it in context, they had only 154 in that last quarter, and in that first quarter against the Lions, we were only 148. So I thought that was interesting. Last week, our top five pressure players were Jack Viney, Nibbler, Oliver, Cozzy, and the Colt. And this week, Trent Rivers was number one. Fantastic. He's only averages 26. He had 23 pressure acts. His season average is 26.8 pressure points. This game he had 55, over double his season average, which is incredibly impressive for a young fella. Jack Viney comes in second, below his season average of 59.6 pressure points, but 45. Nibbler, he's in that top three, top four, top five every single week. He's just my favourite player, full stop. Caleb Windsor, this was really impressive game from Caleb. 17 pressure acts, 39 pressure points, above his season average, but his season average is pretty impressive, 33.3. And this one I thought was brilliant. Andy Moniz Wakefield, I loved his game. I thought he was super impressive. He seems to have one of those players that sometimes that you see him come along who just pick up the speed of AFL and look better at AFL level than they do almost at VFL level. He had 13 pressure acts for 35 pressure points. Really impressive. So he had the fifth most amount of pressure. Ground ball gets, this was one of the curious ones that I sort of was going to flag from last week. So against the Roos, so going back two games, against the Roos we were down 10 in ground ball, but we really got this going. And in the Lions game, we were plus 11, and I forgot to put it in my table here, but in this game we were plus 20, I think. I'll have to check that, but I think we were plus 20, so trending upwards. So ground ball gets, we have been number one for ground ball gets for like 21, 22, 23, we're number one or number two for ground ball gets, and it's completely fallen away this year as a sort of a function of our new game plan. But it seems like, as I suggested last week, they're really looking at this hybrid model, which is sort of an emphasis on contest, and the ground ball gets is a sort of element of that winning the contests. tackles against the Lions. We were plus 18. We laid 71 tackles to their 53 plus 18 in this game. I think is sort of as evidence, further evidence of the more open game style that we played, and deliberately, I think, looked to exploit the lack of foot speed by the Eagles, and really leaning into, I think Goody mentioned this in his presser, designing a sort of method that really reflects the sort of who we've got playing at the moment in this team, which is a lot of young blokes, you know, most of whom are really quick. I'm really surprised how quick Colt was. I'll talk about that in a second when we get to fitness. But we were plus 2 for tackles. This one was a strange stat. So last week we were plus 7 for tackles inside 50. We only laid 6 tackles inside 50 this week, and they laid 19. So we were down 13 for tackles inside 50. But it's a funny, I wonder whether that's more about game style. So again, with the speed of our ball movement and transition, we created lots of space inside our forward 50. We were spreading it. If we couldn't get a good look, you know, that goal that Disco got that sort of went around the top of the arc before a really nice kick by Steve May into Disco, who, you know, nice lead and nice chest mark and goal. That sort of goal, you know, there's less stoppages, there's less need for tackles, I guess. So I think that's probably the reason. And conversely, the reason why the Eagles had 19 tackles, because they were really just looking to get it in there and then sort of fighting for it once they got in there. In terms of the clearances, I'm increasingly, this number, I think, really is, it's becoming a bit like hitouts. It really is sort of not got a great relevance other than territory, but we were against the Lions plus 7 for center clearances and minus 1 for stoppage clearances. In this game, we were minus 10 for center clearances, but plus 5 for stoppage clearances. It seems like we've got a bigger emphasis on winning the stoppage clearances. The center clearances, you know, I think there's a few factors there, not least of which Maxi was, as it turns out, broken his, oh, he's got a chipped ankle bone. And so he sort of was hampered in the second half and really didn't play it much. It came off, I think, about the 6 or 7 mark of the last. And JVR, Disco was also in the ruck. And JVR, I thought, had his sort of least effective game, at least from rucking in the centre square. They really sort of took him to task a little bit. It's a big ask to, ask a young fella to do that much rucking. So it was great to see Turner being used in that role as well. But again, raw totals don't matter. It's about, don't matter so much. It's really about quality and what you do with them. It's about impact, and impact is measured by scoring, so as opposed to the raw numbers. Contested marks, Eagles took 10. We were plus 4 for contested marks, so I thought that was really impressive. Keeping them to only 10 contested marks, taking out 14 ourselves, is pretty good, given really contested marking is their one wood. By way of contrast, in our first game against them, they took 15 to, and we could only manage 7 in that game. That was a huge factor in that loss. So it was really impressive. Turner, I think, is terrific. He again took some really important marks. Melk was good in that space. T-Mac as well. Steve May. It was a really impressive marking performance, and I think that sort of tall ability to mark and control the ball is an important part of Goody's game plan and the way he likes to set the ground up. You're going to take that mark and you can control the ball, hold it, or you've got options then once you take that contested mark. So in the red and blueprint, as I noted at the top, transition from back half is a key metric for it. And so points from defensive half last in the Roos game. So going back, we scored 25 points from our defensive half. Our season average is, well, now it's 32.8, but back then it was 30.7. So 25 Fortunately, they scored 37. So as we talked about, that wasn't great, but it's trending the right way. Last week against the Lions, so 25 against the Roos, we scored. Against the Lions, we scored 37 points from our defensive half. Unfortunately, the Lions scored 51 points from their defensive half. And at that point, the average was 30.9. So way above the average that we give up. And that was probably the deciding factor in the game last week. To a large degree, 51 points from the back half, but 37 for us. This game, fantastic. So I didn't check, but could well be, maybe not, it'd be close to our highest for the season, but we scored 58 points from our back half. Season average is 32, so not a million miles away from twice our season average. And we only allowed the Eagles to score 10 points from their back half. Our season average is we give up nearly 30 points, 29.6 from our back half. So to keep them to only 10 points from their back half tells me a few things. Well, you know, real positives is it's that all-team defense, that spread. And again, you could see it where the opposition, that's what I love to see, the opposition looking not convinced as to what they're going to do next and where they're going to go with the ball and holding it up because there aren't options up the ground and we're covering the corridor. And all of that's running power. You cannot do that without the running power. And we're looking in much, much better shape. Everyone could see it. You could just see how, you know, it's not like magic suddenly where got better. One of the callers that was, I watched the replay and I thought the callers were pretty good this week, and one of the callers whose name escapes me is a race caller who I love, and he wondered whether we might have had something in the plane on the way back from the Gold Coast or from Brisbane. So we really looked a lot better in terms of that. And but you know, keeping them to 10 was impressive. So by way of contrast, so just to sort of give context to that, 58 points we scored from our back half and they only scored 10. When we last played the Eagles, which is what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, we could only manage 14 points from our back half. And they scored 32 points. So they scored three times as many points last time from their back half. And we scored, what's that, almost five times more from our back half this game. And for me, that's all about our running power. This one's really interesting. So Roos centre bounces, we were plus 4, stoppages plus 12, but the big problem against the Roos and the one that, you know, would be keeping them up at night was that we were down 13. We gave up 46 points on turnover. So down 13 on turnover, scored 33 points. Against the Lions, we improved. We scored 39 points, 39, but we were down 8, so they scored 47 points. What was probably more concerning is they caught 6-11, so 17 scoring shots on turnover, but a hell of a lot better this week. So on turnover this week, we were plus 56, which is berserk. So 12-7-79 to 3-5-23, plus 56, that's basically the margin. And very impressive in terms of our ability to hurt them on turnover and defend when they turn the ball over. And that's the red and blueprint. That's exactly what Goody would have wanted. The stoppages in this game, it was, 5-1-31 from around the ground stoppages. Impressive, plus 16. And for centre bounces was the sort of probably the big negative. So not a great day in terms of scores from centre bounces. So we only scored a point. That's pretty terrible. They scored 3-2-20. So they were we were minus 19 in the differential for scores from the centre bounce. So minus 3 overall from stoppages from centre bounce and around the ground. So not a great day from the centre. I think that's probably perhaps at, you know, understandable to agree, given, as I said, Maxi got injured right before halftime. And I don't think he was right last week against the Lions either. He sat out most of the last. As I noted, JVR had a mare in the centre, I thought. And I suspect most of the 19 points the Eagles scored from the centre bounces probably happened when Rui was in the ruck. He gave up a couple of taps. But nonetheless, 56 points from turnover, you know, really in the pure red and blueprint clearances aren't really a big sort of clearances and scores from stoppages aren't nearly a bigger number as they have been for us in previous years. So again, just sort of comparing to our previous Eagles games, as I noted, so in the first Eagle game, as I said, we could only manage 14 points from turnover to their 70. So 112 point turnaround in terms of differential from scores from turnover. And I wonder, in a season between two teams playing each other twice, I wonder if 112 point turnaround for differential is the biggest ever turnaround between two teams. That's an extraordinary number. 112-point turnaround. So, which is a nice segue into fitness, because that's all about ability to run and cover and spread and defend the ground. And for the Eagles, their inability to defend the ground, they just couldn't stop us. And it was that classic scenario where it looks like you've got more players. But one of the things I really loved about the way we're playing is it's, you know, we're, like I mentioned last week, we're really we had a higher than normal uncontested possessions this week, and a lot of them are handballs. We're really looking to get those handball chains. It's similar in the way that we were playing in 21 near the end of the season, with lots of handballs. Your heart's in the mouth. You're hoping they don't break down, but when it comes off, it looks magnificent. And you know, there were a couple of examples where we went end to end, where we got it out in front of the contest with multiple handballs. That was some brilliant work, good pace, but so that's all only possible with the fitness. So you know, I think that it's clear that we're sort of on the up, we're on the trending up in terms of where we're at with our sort of our optimal readiness, being dynamic, whatever phrase you want to use. And I think you can see that in our pressure numbers, as I noted, in our all-team defensive running, our ability to spread, the way that we were moving the ball. You know, really, really impressive. As I've mentioned a few times, and I mentioned again last week, that one of the best sort of measures, apart from, I think pressure is a really good one, but in terms of publicly available data that provides some sort of evidence of where teams are at in terms of that, you know, readiness and being ready to roll, is the Telstra tracker. And, you know, in that we, again, I noted last week how important a lot of those numbers are, particularly defensive running, which is when the opposition isn't when in defense, it's when the opposition has the ball. So it's really defensive running. It's really that spread, that ability to spread and cover the ground. Just running through them quickly. Total distance covered, we smashed them for total distance covered. Langers had the most on the ground, 16 kilometres. Nibbler, 14.6. And Tommy McDonald was third, and he is just playing brilliant footy. Tommy McDonald, I just think he's been a revelation down back. 14.3, his kicking has been fantastic as well. He covered 14.3. Waterman was interesting. He was the fourth and the highest, the biggest distance for the Eagles. So, you know, that's, he really gets on his bike, Waterman. In terms of distance at high speed, Langers again was number one across the ground. But interestingly, Jones for them was, he's pretty quick, and he was second. Nibbler and Jaden Hunt, it's great to see him up there. Worked super hard. I cheered him hard. It was really good to see him back at the MCG. And Cade Chandler. This one was interesting. Maximum speed. Waterman was the fastest player on the ground, 32 kilometres maximum speed. Ryan was next, 31.7. And then, interestingly, in maximum speed, we only had one in the top five, which was Andy Meneses-Wakefield. He's really got good leg speed. And then average, this is where it sort of starts to show our work rate and our higher work rate. The Colt had the highest average speed, 10 kilometres. Then Sparrow, Nibbler, Chesser for them, and then Langdon. Total sprints, Chin had the most total sprints, 26, then Nibbler, 24, Jones for them, 22, Caleb Windsor, 21, and Jaden Hunt. Repeat sprints is one of those indicators for fitness, because obviously it really tests players' fitness to go again. Chin, again, was on top of that one, five, equal with Windsor with five. Jaden Hunt, excellent game from him, I thought, in terms of his work rate, four, McVee, four, and Nibbler, four. So this is the one that really, though, it's called Work Rate on the Tracker, and I think these are the best sort of evidence of work rate. Tommy Sparrow was average speed and attack. He topped the charts, really impressive, surprising to some degree, 9.3. The Colt second, 8.9. Jones again for them, Nibbler, and then Hutchinson. But this is really the one that's most important, which is, as I noted before, average speed in defense. And this is, I know, when we're really, you know, in our best shape, and I'm feeling really confident when we dominate this stat, and we did this week. So average speed in defense, we had the top five players. You can only see the top five in all of these, unfortunately. I was really surprised at this. So the average speed in defense, number one was the Colt, 9.7. Tommy Sparrow, Nibbler, Tommy McDonald, and Jack Viney. So that just really demonstrates how well, how hard we worked, and how hard we made it for them to move the ball from one end to the other, but how many options that we had. And I think it's really important, a player like Tommy Sparrow, is that it goes on, you know, he has to do a lot of unrewarded running to block off switch options, the block up space, and Nibbler's obviously in the same boat. Those players work super hard, but I could not be more impressed. For the Colt to top that one, average speed and defense, just really shows both his sort of discipline, his work rate, but he's got some serious wheels, which is a pleasant surprise. Quickly, the centre bounce attendances. Last week, Maxi Gawn, Clayton Oliver, Jack Viney, Trent Rivers, Tommy Sparrow were our five top centre bounce attendees. And this week, Trent Rivers, 24. So he topped it. Clayton Oliver, 23. Maxi Gawn, Viney, and Tommy Sparrow. Looks like Tommy Sparrow, it's his second week in a row now. It's his third week in a row where he's back in the centre after sort of playing a sort of hybrid half forward role, high half forward role. And so I thought he's working really hard. What a game by Trent Rivers, 24 centre bounce attendances. He was awesome the whole game, just terrific. And so leading into that, just the discussion about the kids, it just was fantastic. It's so great to go to the footy and be excited by, you know, watching young players grow right before our eyes. If Andy would let me and cough up for paying for a song, I'd be sort of playing right now The Kids Are All Right by The Who, because The Kids Are All Right. The coaches' votes came out today. Trent Rivers had got 10 votes. He's 22. Jacob Van Rooyen, he got 7 coaches' votes. He's 21. Caleb Windsor got 7 votes. He's only 19. Ed Langdon got 2. Judd McVee got 2. He's 20. Cozzy Pickett got 1, and he's just turned 23. Tom McDonald is 24. No, that's a joke. Tommy, he's ageless, so he is also young as well. And in addition to those players, Colt played great. Won't be surprised if he gets the Rising Star nomination this week. He's only 19, just a kid. Disco was solid. I thought he's only 22. I thought that was Bowie's best game for quite a while. Still a lot of upside there. He's also only 22. And the other one, as I noted before, is AMW. I thought he was terrific, and he's only 20. So the future's so bright. I'm sitting here in a dark room with sunglasses on. That really is impressive, you know, in terms of the kids won us the game, particularly with losing Maxi through injury. They really stood up. You know, how impressive was Rivers? Windsor's got something about him, that sort of leg speed. And on AMW, I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps his spot actually going forward in the if he keeps his spot in the team going forward. He's been great. He's strong in the contest. He uses the ball, makes good decisions. He took an excellent one-on-one mark, and he's got something all teams need, particularly off that halfback flank. He's got genuine leg speed, and I wonder whether he could be that small defender that we've really lacked since Jets in 2018, when, you know, I know he played on after that, but he was brilliant in 2018 Jets, and we really haven't replaced you know, that Jets for that role. McVee's been brilliant taking those sort of mid-sized to small dangerous forwards like Cody Waitman and Bobby Hill. You know, he's been brilliant. But, I if AMW can take those sorts of players, that'll free McVee up to play higher up the ground where his beautiful kicking and his elite decision-making can be even more damaging than it currently is. I thought that Judd McVee's game was just brilliant on the weekend. He is going to be an absolute star. And on that, Andy noted in the podcast thread that I wasn't taking any questions, which sounded very formal, particularly given my thinking was not taking questions. Well, taking questions seemed a bit rich, by myself taking people's questions. So that was why I thought not to take questions. But there was one on this topic from What Say What that I thought I'd briefly address. The question was, who is the most promising of our 22 and under brigade and who will end up the best player? Deep dive into stats may be required. I won't go into detail, but I did do a deep dive into stats on this particular player. And for me, the answer to that question is pretty straightforward. I think the answer is who's the most promising is JVR. I'm really amazed how underrated he is. He is just an out-and-out gun. I did do a beginning of the season, I did a deep dive into the stats. I compared him to a range of players from the past, including Brown from the Lions, and all of the current young guns. So Ugelhagen, Logan McDonald, Amos, and really he and the King brothers, he has all of them covered. He has, I think he's the best young forward in the game right now. Tracy's is good, but he's only coming good this year. His numbers stack up against the best tall forwards, key forwards at the same age, really, going right back to the 70s. Probably the one area that he doesn't sort of match up on someone like Brown or even someone like the King brothers perhaps is he's sort of his contested marks. I think partly that's a function of us asking him to do so much rucking. Turner helped him out, and I think we saw the benefit of that. He'll get there. Maybe he'll never be quite the one grab player, but in all of the other statistical categories, he's got all of those players covered, and he is just going to be a gun. You know what you're going to get every week from him. He's a team player. He's a really respectful young bloke, so good for the culture. He's already said he wants to be a leader. His numbers are super impressive. And he's only 21. He's only going to get better. He wants the ball. I think, we won't even see the best of Rui until he's 24, 25. So we've got another 3 years before he gets to the peak of his powers. So I think that's an easy one for who's going to be the best. But having said that, don't go to sleep on Judd McVee. I have got so much time for this young man. I make a comparison to Dacos. He's a beautiful kicker of the football. That's why I think ultimately he might play a sort of Dacos role coming off the halfback flank into the midfield and vice versa. Love to get him higher up the ground. He's a beautiful kick, but I think like all of the best players and like Dacos and I think that the other thing that he's really great is he makes great decisions. He makes very good sort of instinctive decisions, quick. He sums up the situation. He doesn't panic. He was an absolute standout. So, I think his upside is huge. If they did that draft again, he'd be top 10. I have no doubt of that. I mean, I guess that's hard to sort of quantify, but I think he's an absolute sort of future star. He's a star already. Super important to how we set up in our defense. And he's only, he's got massive upside. As I said, he's only 20. His peak won't be for till he's 22, 23 either. So he's someone who will just get better, and I don't quite know what his upside is. Trent Rivers, it feels like he's been around for ages. He's only 22. People have been calling out for him to go into the middle. I haven't sort of been keen on it because, I like him down back so much. But geez, it's pretty hard to argue with what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. He was, as I said, 10 coaches' votes in this game. He was awesome for the entire game. Works hard, good depth on his kicks. He's a total gunzer. You know, I think he's probably relatively close to his sort of potential, but maybe there's more upside for him to come. And who knows with the Colt, who knows at what sort of heat level he's got. He's got a real attitude. I think that he's got a real X factor about him. I love the sort of energy he brings. He's sort of a natural, aggressive player. We've talked in the last few weeks, George, Andy and I, about, George and Andy sort of noting that, questioning whether we were aggressive enough against Collingwood, and I'm not sure about, you know, that stuff. I just feel like for some players it's not, you know, if it's not instinctive, it feels a bit contrived if they're going to go out and fly the flag. And but, you know, there's some players like Coz and I think Colts are one of them who, you know, who naturally play on the edge and bring a different energy. And I think we saw that in that sort of halftime melee, you know, he really gets amongst it, and he sort of, I love his strut. He reminds me of a sort of combination of Brett Lovett and Djokovic. So it was great to see him kick the goals, really terrific game. So who knows, you know, he could be, you know, who knows what his upside is. He's definitely got the talent, but you know, if I was to put some money on it, it would be JVR, because the fundamentals are so strong. Super impressive, and a terrific game from him. All right, so on to this week's game, Saturday night. It is going to be a corker. Looking at these two teams head to head, all time 86 231, so they've got the head-to-head sewn up. It's going to be hard for us to drag that back another 100 years, and we might another 60 years. The last 10 matches, the last 10 matches is 6-4, so 6-4 our way. The rating points above average, in terms of where we're at, we're very close to them in a lot of areas this year. The difference between the two teams, and I think this is where the game will be won and lost, Max is a big out, obviously, is they're ranked minus 2.5 for ratings, attack, but we're minus 5.3. But, you know, I think we're on the upward trajectory for our attack. The big difference, and I think this is where the game will be won and lost, and I'm really confident we'll win this game, is we're number three in defence, plus 5.1, and they're 0.03. It's still, their defence is improved significantly, absolutely, no doubt about it. But I think that, you know, that's where they've still got a lot of work to do. It has improved, but they can be opened up, as we've seen in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Teams can score quickly against the Bombers. They do press up high so that they give teams a look, but their fundamentals behind the ball are much, much better than they were in the last couple of years. In terms of, you know, looking at their numbers, very similar, like, game. The sort of big difference is that they're playing a much more forward half game than us, so it'll be really interesting to see how this game looks. I think Max Out is a wild card because it makes it harder for us to control territory. The other wild card is the weather. If it's slippery, I think there's rain predicted, but only a little bit. I'm sort of half hoping it is slippery because that will negate Maxi being out. But if it is a little bit slippery at the MCG, cold sort of winter's night, I wonder whether, you know, we might play a forward half game, sort of our more traditional style, in a way that we did, in a way that we did at times against Lions. That was more of a hybrid. But I wonder whether they will certainly look to play that way, and so I wonder whether we will lean into it, because, you know, I think that sort of handball connecting, it works perfectly on a sunny day at the G. I'm not as convinced it works so well on a slippery day, which is in a game which is bound to be high pressure, because they'll want to prove themselves against a good team as we do now. This is a, you know, classic 8-point game. Key to the game, I think, will be merit is obviously a big factor in this game. They've got a lot more, they have been possessing the ball a lot more, but it depends how we play. We possess the ball a fair bit on the weekend, so a little will depend on how it looks In terms of the sort of the night and sort of how we play. They're ranked number two in uncontested possessions per game, which sort of speaks to the way that they like to move the ball. They're ranked third in effective disposals per game, fifth for marks inside 50, fifth in intercepts per game. But they're 12th in contested possessions, but that's around about where we are, 14th in least opponent marks, and 14th in team to opponent turnovers per game. So they're ranked third in team to opponent tackles inside 50. They've been much more impressive this year. I think their ladder, their position flatters them somewhat, but they've been impressive. I think a lot will depend on what plans we put in place for merit is big to them. I think is super important for them. Martin is super important for them. They'll have a ruck advantage with Draper. Let's hope that the weather comes in a little bit that will negate that. Harrison Jones is a player who's improved a lot. Nate Caddy, young guy. They've Peter Wright. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do in terms of Maxi. I don't know that Fullerton's ready. I think Tomlinson might come back in. If he comes back in, he could he take someone like Peter Wright? He may not have the height, but he could play one-on-one. I really think Tomo needs a one-on-one matchup. The other player that I've really got a lot of time for them, and is exactly the sort of player, there's two actually, but Kyle Langford. It'll be interesting to see who Melksham goes to defensively, but up forward, Kyle Langford, he's a terrific player that we're going to have to work hard. He might be a matchup for McVee, maybe if Tomo comes in for Peter Wright. Jade Gresham is the sort of player that we've struggled with, so I reckon AMW is a good matchup for him. But really, now they've got definitely an advantage with Sam Draper, with Maxi going out. So it'll be curious to see. Fullerton is the logical one, but I'm not convinced that he's done enough. But it really, I think it can only be Fullerton. It can't really be Varell. I don't think Varell's ready. But, big call from the selection. I think Nibbler will go to Zach Merritt. He's did a terrific job on Lachie Neal and Dacos, so he's the obvious one to go to Zach Merritt. Stringer will be, he's that X factor. It'll be interesting to see who matches up on him. Mason Redman is a player who bounces off halfback flank. And so it'll be interesting to see if they run someone with him, because he's a bit like Blakey for the Swans. He's important to how they transition. The other player down there, that's Nick Martin, I think he's really important as well. I'm really confident about this game. I think we match up well against them. It will come down to contest and pressure. They'll come into this game really focused on winning the pressure contest. But so will we, obviously. It's a massive out having no Maxi, there's opportunities for other players. And in some respects, looking at it sort of as optimistically as I can, losing our two best players for this game in track and Maxi. But the Bombers' planning will have all been around, Maxi being in this side. And if the night is a bit wet, if the night isn't sort of conducive to contested marking, that will definitely sort of be in our favor, I think, and it will make it harder for them. Just going back to the numbers, really the big difference between them, they're remarkably similar, right across every line. The numbers between the two sides are remarkably similar. In terms of the game style, the thing that jumps out for me is uncontested possession. So the Bombers are averaging 238 uncontested possessions a game to our 209. But I do wonder whether we're playing a sort of higher possession game. We've played these sort of three different styles of games in the last 3 weeks. We've got different ways of playing. I'll be really fascinated to see which approach Goody takes. Do we play more like we did against Brisbane, or do we sort of look to hurt their inability to, or their sort of defensive weakness, and move it quick? Again, a fair bit will depend on the weather, I think, in terms of if it's really slippery. Big game. once again, D's fans, if you can get along, do get along. You know, I can't wait Saturday night. This is a massive game for our chances of making finals. It's the absolute classic 8-point game. I'm super confident they're favourites. I think they deserve to be favourites. But, you know, I think we'll win. And we come out of this block of period, I think we'll be ready to roll. They will have been focused on this. I mentioned Tomlinson coming in. So the ins, I think, maybe Tomlinson, but that's only if they free up someone else. But now that I think about it, I don't think Tomlinson will come in. We've probably got enough coverage down back. Fullerton in seems the logical one to come back in. Petty will be the one that will be really interesting to see. He'll come back in if he's ready to go. What does that mean? Does that mean Turner? You know, I can't see them using Turner on the bench. Maybe they sort of keep him in, no Tomlinson, and they sort of... Or alternatively, no Fullerton, and Petty comes in and they share duties. It's going to be a big call. Hard to see them not picking Fullerton, I wouldn't have thought. And AMW, maybe he gets sort of bounced to the sub. Hopefully Colt isn't the sub. I think I just want him in the side going forward, you know, even though that contradicts what I said before about AMW. So maybe one of those two being the sub. Big game. Let's get along. And we'll speak next week. We'll do a stats file next week and a review of this game. And looking forward to Andy and George being back on deck after the Dockers game. Go Red Leggers!
That was Bin Man with his stats files from last week's match against the Eagles, as well as his preview of the upcoming game against the Bombers. As I mentioned in the intro, we will present this same format next week whilst I'm loading during my bye period. Our regular podcast format will return after the Round 19 match against the Dockers. See you in a few weeks. Go, Demon.
Go, Red Leggers.
To the top, we got the fire with the desire.